Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Kenny Albert for joining us in the previous half hour. Joe Starkey coming up in this half hour. First, our play-by-play call of the day. LeBron James and the Cavs tie the series with the Celtics at 2 apiece.
106-95 is the Cavalier lead. We're down to 150 remaining in the fourth quarter. Shot clock at 12. LeBron waits for a high hill screen. Gets picked up by Rozier. Smart's grabbing on the hill. Fires a three. Does LeBron? He hits it! Oh, goodness! The Cavaliers ate a ton of that 24-second shot clock.
That essentially put it away last night. And the Cavaliers won it. 111-102 over the Celtics last night. Golden State and Houston tonight on TNT. Golden State won the last game by 41. That appears on the surface to be a wide margin. All right. The Phillies are playing for first place tonight when they take on the Atlanta Braves. And they're a half game back. And you got to be impressed with what they've done to this point. And tonight, Vince Velasquez against Brandon McCarthy this evening. Good matchup. Meanwhile, on the other side of the state, the Pirates have surprised everybody at 26-20. Neil Huntington has received a fair amount of criticism for how things, especially in the offseason, played out. Joe Starkey now joins us from Pittsburgh. Joe, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Steve, it's my pleasure. I love the state in sports. Willie Stargell, one of my top maybe five all-time athletes growing up, plus I'm from Buffalo. The Buffalo Sabres come into the NHL. It's been pretty much disastrous ever since for the Buffalo Sabres and the Bills. And the Buffalo Braves only lasted six more years.
Yeah, but you had Ernie DiGregorio. You had Ernie D. You had Bob McAdoo.
Bob McAdoo, one of the first great shooting big men. And Ernie D. would have been one of the great point guards in history if he hadn't wrecked his knee.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I want to. You wrote something recently about, look, let's take a look at Neil Huntington and what he's done. How difficult is it to work within the confines of a budget that, say, you know, with all due respect to Brian Cashman, doesn't have to?
Well, I mean, it comes up in so many different areas. One, going out and fixing a problem by buying a replacement or throwing money at a problem, it doesn't exist. So that's all of that is off the table. So you're already in a whole different ballpark, so to speak, than so many other teams, including at least a couple in your own division, one being the Cubs. And then they have to just make, or I shouldn't say have to, because I believe that a significant portion of the Pirates' financial constraints are self-imposed. So they choose to, when it comes time to re-signing somebody like a Jay Happ, for example, a couple years ago, they chose not to. That was Neil Huntington's. Those were Neil Huntington's words. They chose not to get in that game. So it's different than, certainly, I think, than almost anybody even in their own division. Honestly, now that the Brewers sort of went all in this past off season, the Pirates are just operating on a different plane.
And part of that is you can go out, for example, the Red Sox can get a J.D. Martinez. I mean, the Red Sox actually have a starting lineup that has more homegrown guys than the Pirates do, but they can get a J.D. Martinez. The Pirates don't do that, but there's another part to it. It's also the looking at your own personnel and saying, nope, we're not going to re-sign them for a bigger contract. I don't think that really is brought up that often.
Well, that's true. And there have been guys that they've re-signed early. McCutcheon was one, actually. He did sign a second contract. Polanco was one that hasn't worked out too great so far. And Marte was one. So they do identify guys, and they do sign them to second deals, but then in a lot of cases they don't either. Gerrit Cole is one. McCutcheon to a third contract is one. And there have been others. Russell Martin, when he left. Jay Happ, I just mentioned, when he left.
Yeah.
So you mentioned homegrown players. The Pirates don't have a ton of those either. It's just a very interesting and, I think, unique situation here, is that they don't go out and buy big name or high price free agents, and they haven't done a great job in the draft. And yet, I still think that Neil Huntington has done a good job, because he's gone out and found ways to get players not through conventional means, which would be free agency or the draft. Nothing intentional with the draft. I'm sure he's wanted to draft better, but they haven't.
Which brings me to the next part. There was a windfall for every Major League Baseball team this year, and that was through the sale of BAMTech involving Disney, where each team in the opening quarter of this year, it's been reported, received $50 million each. Now, I'm not saying you take all $50 million and go out and buy a bunch of players, but that provides at least a financial leeway for some thought. Has there been some frustration in Pittsburgh that there's been a thought process of maybe sitting on that money?
Absolutely. I mean, it's reflected in the attendance, and it's not just this year. It's the past 2 years. Attendance and TV ratings have plummeted. Now, I haven't seen TV ratings this year, but attendance has gone down again. Part of that due to the weather, I'm sure, but I was at the game on Sunday, and it was beautiful. And they only got 17,000 for a game against the Padres, with the Pirates a half game out of first place. So there's definitely been some damage to the trust of the fan base in management, in ownership. And do people believe that Bob Nutting wants to win? There's certainly been major upset about that, and major questions asked about that, and the fans have pretty much answered with their wallets for the most part.
Yeah, they're averaging, the latest I saw was 15,800 a game. They're 28th in the majors in attendance right now, Joe, which, I mean, that is a, I know the weather's been bad, but that's still a statement unto itself.
Yes, it's the fifth largest drop in the league. I was just looking at that. I was going to talk about that later today on the radio here in Pittsburgh, is that attendance is down pretty much all over baseball. But fifth highest drop in attendance right here, despite the team off to a great start. That, to me, speaks volumes. I mean, those are the kinds of numbers you can't deny if you're the Pirates, that, yes, fewer and fewer people are going to our games, and for the last couple of years, fewer and fewer are watching our games.
All right, what do you think of the team so far?
Man, I don't know what to think. It's been mostly beating up on bad teams.
Yep.
I think there's something like 16-7 against teams under 500.
Right.
But there are things I like a lot. I mean, look around the diamond. Marte, who's hurt now, got off to a great start. Looked like his pre-suspension self, only with a little more power, sort of ironically, given that his suspension was for steroids.
Yeah.
Cervelli looks great. Couple other guys, Colin Moran is interesting to me. I think Josh Bell is going to be a really good player, and Corey Dickerson might be the story of the year, that somehow, some way, they got him off the scrap heap from Tampa Bay. So there are things to like, and then there's the wondering, all right, after they get through with the Reds here this week, they're going to have 19 games in a row against, in no particular order, Cubs, Cardinals, Dodgers, Diamondbacks, then the Cubs and Cardinals again. So this is, and they're going to have a day off about midway through June. So that's going to be a crucible. And if they survive that, you know, still whatever, a handful of games over 500, then I'll definitely believe in this team. But right now I'm sticking to my preseason prediction of about 78-80 wins.
Yeah, I had 75. I'll admit, Joe, I started at 72. But in a weak moment, I got him to 75. So
I don't blame you.
One thing I was told by a friend of mine that saw them down in spring training, he says, I'll tell you right now, this team can hit. Is that the impression you've had so far, that, you know, I mean, yeah, you've had the greatest pitching staffs, but is it your impression, Joe, this team can hit?
So far, the numbers say they can, although I also saw a number, and sometimes I'll take these deep dives into stats where they're among the lowest teams in the league in terms of hard-hit balls. So I think they're the second lowest of the lowest, in fact. So common sense would tell you there that that would catch up with you at some point, as would facing tougher pitching. But at the same time, I think they've got some good bats. I mean, I mentioned them. Marte has a track record as a pretty good hitter in the majors. Colin Moran, I don't know about. I think Josh the better. Polanco has had his ups and downs, but leads the team in homers. And now Austin Meadows, who was going to be McCutcheon's heir apparent, he's now up here and had a great first series. But as you know, baseball is a game of you have to pass the test over time. So who knows? But yeah, there's signs. They're at least a decent above-average offensive team. I don't know if they're the second-best team in baseball, possibly, or in the National League, which is what the numbers would say so far.
I want to ask you about the part about the organization, because obviously in doing the State College Spikes games up here during the summer, you know, for a period of time I saw the Pirates prospects here for 6 years, and that now they play against them. What is it about, and where's Neil Huntington's responsibility lie in the drafting part, or does it lie someplace else?
I mean, to me, it always, that's the GM. You know, sometimes you get a great pick that he had nothing to do with, but that goes on his ledger. And sometimes you get a terrible pick that he had nothing to do with, and that goes on his ledger. I think all of it does. But the fact of the matter is, there was a study done late last season in terms of the WAR, the stat WAR, W-A-R, which measures your all-around contributions, and the Pirates had the least amount of homegrown players, players they drafted or signed out of Latin America, something like that. They had the least amount in the majors last season, which blew me away, because for a lot of those years, leading up to last year, a lot of those years early in the Huntington tenure, they drafted pretty highly, and they didn't draft well. That's just a fact. I mean, guys like Tony Sanchez as the fourth pick overall,
and
Reese McGuire as the 14th pick overall, and bad luck with guys like Jameson Taillon, who still has a chance to be very good, but you know, had a lot of injury issues and things early in his career. Pedro Alvarez is gone. Garrett Cole is gone. And then in the lower ends of the draft, they just haven't come up with much, and that's absolutely on Neil Huntington, even if it's on guys elsewhere in the organization, because he's the person who hires and fires them.
Well, now the next question is, where to from here? it sounds like he's done as much as he can do in a lot of ways. But well, is it possible, Joe, to duct tape a team together and be competitive all the time?
Well, what we didn't mention is the good things that Neil Huntington has done.
That's right.
In terms of trades and in terms of finding people in different places. I mean, Corey Dickerson's an example.
Great pick.
Francisco Cervelli was an example. Mm-hmm. Got him for Justin Wilson, a relief pitcher. And he's had a way over the years of coming up with guys brilliantly. Francisco Liriano, A.J. Burnett,
Vasquez.
Felipe Vasquez. I mean, the list goes on and on. That's his strength. And that can mitigate if you screw up your drafts. You know, in a way, what difference does it make if you go find young players elsewhere? You know what I mean?
Joe, how much pressure, though, does it put on a GM and even a field manager to estimate the shelf life of a player? I mean, because they're in that position where they can't go too far with somebody, because if they do, then it drags down a couple of other areas.
Right. I mean, that's the key for them, is to sort of cut bait with some of these guys before it's too late. You'd rather do it a year too early than a year too late. And so you see them not sign a Neil Walker, or not sign, re-sign again an Andrew McCutcheon, extend an Andrew McCutcheon.
Right. That's a lot of pressure, because you know, you've got to now make a guess as to, okay, I think the shelf life's near an end. I know you got to go, Joe. I really enjoyed it a lot. It's great to talk with you.
Likewise, Steve. Thank you for having me on anytime.
Joe Starkey from Pittsburgh, and we'll come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Phillies Braves tonight, 7:05, first pitch, 6:30 the airtime. Vince Velasquez goes for the Phillies tonight. And if the Phillies win, they go into first place. May 22nd. Why not? Take over first place now. Golden State Houston tonight, off night for hockey. Tomorrow night, Tampa Bay, Washington. Kenny Albert will watch that with great interest. Kenny joined us in the previous half hour. He'll watch that with great interest because he's calling the Stanley Cup Final in Westwood 1. And if Washington wins, Game 1 is in Vegas. And if Tampa Bay wins, Game 1 is in Florida. So that's when the Pirates play the Reds tonight, by the way, since we had Joe Starkey just on moments ago. I'm going back to what I talked about earlier. The WWE signed a $1 billion 5-year deal with Fox. Now, whether it ends up on Fox Sports 1, this is for the SmackDown part. Raw remains on USA. But they'll get the SmackDown contract. Now, one would think that that's going to be on FS1, but you never know. And it's interesting how ESPN SportsCenter has done more and more with the WWE. And I've never agreed with it. I think it's one thing that on a talk show, for example, let's take the new show Get Up, which if you haven't been paying attention to, and based on the ratings, you haven't. that's a show that does a wide variety of things in the morning. It's an entertainment show. I don't consider it a part of the news division. SportsCenter is a part of the news division, and they'll do segments sometimes in the WWE, and I'll sit there and say, I'm sorry. If I'm in the building and I have a seat at the table, I'm telling them, look, that's the entertainment division. The entertainment division's got to be separate from the sports division. Now, when it comes to the entertainment part of it, absolutely, when I look at putting on the WWE or eSports, whatever, I'm perfectly fine with that. That's the entertainment division. I'd be perfectly fine putting any of those. If it draws some viewers and so forth, even if it's ESPN, for example, what do you think the E stands for? Entertainment. Okay. And same thing with Fox Sports or Fox Sports 1. To me, it's entertainment, but it's not part of, but something that the news division stays away from. For example, you don't see the CBS Evening News, hey, I think we'll do a segment on NCIS. No. That's not how it works. Which then brings to the topic we had yesterday, the Asian Games, which will take place in late August into early September in Jakarta, will include esports. Now, to me, esports falls not quite, but I will lump them in the same category as the WWE. The WWE, for example, is scripted. It's extremely athletic, but it's also scripted athleticism. Esports is not scripted. But the question is it athletic? And some say that the foray to the Asian Games in late August, early September might open the door for it to become an Olympic event. I realize they're trying to do everything they can to get millennials involved emotionally in sports. I understand that completely. It has been one of the more baffling debates I've seen among marketing experts, none of which knows how to make it work. Nobody knows. Nobody knows how to get millennials invested in sports the same way our generation was invested in sports. They have no idea. So would esports be a way to do it? We'll talk about it.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We talked hockey with Kenny Albert earlier today. 3:35. Baseball with Joe Starkey at 4:06. Open lines now 1-800-795-9565. That's 800-795-9565. And we have plenty coming up on tomorrow's show as well. Kim Jones, by the way, here Friday to talk about the NFL from NFL Network. Get an opportunity to talk with her. And tomorrow's show includes Jordan Rodrigue on the sale of the Carolina Panthers to David Tepper, the Steelers minority owner. Mark Wogenrich tomorrow. I'm Matt Millen. Let's see. Also tomorrow, Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal, on $500 million that Michigan State has allocated. Okay. Okay. I just got an email from James Franklin about our event tomorrow. Something he wants. Something he wants to do. Boy, he does not like the suit. Jeez. I mean, he prefaced it by and then he closed out. I mean, in the middle was the stuff.
Suit, Sean. Almost the words kind of sound similar. I was deeply concerned there for about a half a second.
No. He's very specific about the suit.
Chris Soleri has been all over the Michigan State situation. It'll be great to hear again from him. He's always phenomenal on our show. And I got to thinking of that $500 million. I would think they could tap into four different ways to come up with the money. Like, one would be tuition, but would you increase the tuition? And then there's the legislature. You know, you take money out of the taxes, the state taxes. And I would think they have a very rich endowment there. But then again, you'd have those people, okay, you're going to come back and ask us in 2019 to, you know, have scratch off another check. So you got to watch out there. Or you just get a loan and then you, you know, get a bond issued and then pay it back. So it's just really interesting how they'll be able to pony up all that money in what direction.
All right, let's start with a couple of basics. Number one, the state of Michigan does not want to give Michigan State more money from a state allocation. They feel like they've maxed out from a state government point of view as to the allocation to the state university. So that's one. Number two, tuition. Tuition becomes another issue. There's only so much you can kick it up. Where's the level where you kick it up to? And you got people saying, I think I'll go to Central Michigan. I'll go to Eastern Michigan. I mean, there's a level at some point that that has to come into play. Next. Because you're thinking various ways, how can they come up with the $500 million? Because they don't have it. They just finished a $1 billion campaign. Billion. Okay? $1 billion campaign. Okay? And guess what? All the money has already been allocated for buildings. So they can't take it out of that. In other words, they're stuck. Now, they came over.
So it sounds like they'll get the loan.
Well, they're going to have to do something, but it puts them in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
And financially. I mean, obviously, you know, there are bigger issues. I mean, look, but we're taking this from a logistical point of view. We're not taking this from an emotional point of view, okay? So now we're talking about the logistics. Where do you come up with the money? And I can tell you right now, I don't think they know. I mean, and that's the key part of it. I don't think they know. So but they're trying to get out ahead of it, but they've still got other problems. These are not the only problems that they have to deal with. And the other problems they have to deal with include the basketball program and the football program, which are not related at all to Larry Nassar. But what they've done is that Larry Nassar then brought to light other issues. And now they've come on. Now, the $425 million goes to the 332 settlements that are already there. The other $75 million is in case somebody else or others come forward, which I think they're anticipating. But where they come up with the money, this is not easy. Where do you come up with the $500 million? Well, they got to come up with the $500 million somewhere. But they've also pledged to pay it, so they're going to do it. Do you take it out of the athletic budget? Then what does it then do for other sports? Do you decide, for example, we're not going to fully fund, pick one, You're not going to fully fund the swimming program, the wrestling program, the baseball program, and the soccer program. And then allocate that money in the direction of settlements. I don't know. Do you stay away from the athletic department completely? Again, there's only so much state money you can get. The state has pretty much told them, nah, I don't think so. State says they're tapped out. Okay. And you can see that in many states. Now, do they have insurance? Well, for one thing, you know, the insurance company is not going to be enamored with this, right? They're going to... They're not going to be in the mood to pay. Especially, do they want to pay... Let's take an example. What would the insurance company object to? The insurance company would object to, probably, people that had no association with... with Michigan State suing Michigan State. Now, why would they sue Michigan State? Now, so let's take the young gymnasts that are sexually assaulted, but it happened at USA Gymnastics. It happened in, I don't know, Colorado Springs or where's the Caroli Ranch, Texas?
Correct.
All right. Right. Now, what can they argue that then brings Michigan State into play? What they can argue that brings Michigan State into play is that, wait a minute, at Michigan State, a softball player in 1998 warned you about this and you did nothing. And because you did nothing, it led to me down the road being sexually assaulted. See what I mean? So that gymnast has zero affiliation with Michigan State, except they had an affiliation with Larry Nassar, employed by Michigan State. And the story about the softball player is true. I mean, it happened in 97, 98. He said, hey, and they were like, please. Well, that's where you get into trouble. So the insurance company would be like, hey, we're not going to pay for this. And, you know, their argument's going to be that USA Gymnastics should pay for it. Nah, so that's, you know, and I don't know, and who knows what these policies read. This is where... So where do they get the $500 million? Well, Chris Solari will talk about this tomorrow, and I can tell you, at least off the top, I don't think Chris knows either. Nobody knows. I mean, nobody knows. Because that's one heck of a number. But there's also a lot of potential victims in this case. You know, that's... And now here's the other part. Michigan State still does not have a permanent president. And Michigan State is even further away from having an athletic director. They have an interim athletic director. He was the person that was named... In fact, I was there the day they named him. Because Penn State was playing basketball there that day. But they don't have a president, and because they don't have a president, they're even further away from having an athletic director. So, in a lot of ways, they give one the impression they're trying to do this by the seat of their pants. Well, I mean, look, that's a hard way to operate. But it's also a hard situation to operate in, and it's also a hard situation to have definitive answers. And if you think for a moment that the football and basketball situations are out of the woods, and that all the $500 million there, you know, hey, here you go. They are not out of the woods in their football or their basketball programs. They are not out of the woods. There's too many issues surrounding them. I mean, just because nobody's talking doesn't mean there are no issues. And when I mean nobody talking, I mean football coach and the basketball coach have done no talking. In fact, Tom Izzo, for the first time in years, did not go to the Big Ten meetings. I'm not sure if D'Antonio did, but Izzo did not. And Izzo's been put, obviously, in a position where he's had all these press conferences he's had to do. By the way, Christian Hackenberg was dealt to the Oakland Raiders today for a conditional draft pick. And it's a conditional seventh-round pick. So Christian Hackenberg is now in Oakland with Jason Kabinda and Saeed Blacknall. So if you're wondering what the depth chart looks like in Oakland at quarterback, it is Derek Carr, yes, Michigan State's Connor Cook, former Bills first-round pick E.J. Manuel, and Christian Hackenberg. So, the time with the Jets lasted 2 years, and now it's time for the Raiders and John Gruden. The Jets, of course, have had two offensive coordinators and two quarterback coaches in his first 2 years. Shane Gailey, Kevin Petullo, and then, of course, last year was John Morton overall and Jeremy Bates. Bates was promoted to coordinator after the season. So Hackenberg went to Bates and had a meeting with him to discuss ways to improve. They talked about tweaking his motion, but Bates told Hackenberg, quote, he didn't think it could be done in one off season. That's why he went to outside help. So Hackenberg has been dealt to the Raiders for a conditional seventh round pick next year. All right, we'll take a break. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. Yes, Christian Hackenberg dealt by the Jets for a conditional seventh-round pick to the Oakland Raiders. So now he gets John Gruden as his head coach. Competition there is E.J. Manuel, Connor Cook, essentially, because obviously Derek Carr is entrenched as the number one quarterback. But E.J. Manuel is a good example of what I was talking about. I think I talked about mostly last week. But I was discussing last week, and this was in relation to Tony Carr being at the NBA Combine. I said, look, if you're an NBA first-round pick, your path to a second contract is pretty clear. And you essentially, as a first-round pick in the NBA, have to play your way out of the league. You're a second-round pick or a free agent. To get that second contract, you got to play your way into the league. Well, it's the same story here in football. In the NFL, if you're a top three-round pick, and especially if you're a first-round pick, you've got to play your way out of the league. You know E.J. Manuel, who has done zilch everywhere he's gone, is still getting opportunities. That's a perfect example of a player that has to, quote, play his way out of the league. Now, if you're a fourth-round pick, the seventh-round or a free agent, to get that second contract, you got to play your way into the league. The E.J. Manuel is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. The first-round pick that has shown essentially nothing on the pro level. But he's going to continue to get opportunities because he's still that first-round pick by somebody. So he's got to play his way out of the league. Now, he may be very close to doing that. But that's when I do, when I give you that example, that in general, top three-round picks usually have to play their way out of the league. 4 through 7 of free agents have to play their way into the league. And I'm not talking about making the initial roster. That's not what I'm talking about. The key in the NFL is to get that second contract. Now, if you get a third contract, you're golden. But when I mean play your way into the league, I mean you play your way, you got to play your way in to get that second contract. Because top three-round picks are probably going to get that second contract. I believe the number is 84%. I mean, you got to play your way out. Same thing in the NBA. You're a first-round pick, man, they're going to give you chance after chance after chance after chance. It may not be with the team that drafted you, but somebody's going to keep giving you chances. And you have to almost play your way out of the league. If you're a second-round pick or a free agent, to get that second, all-important second contract, man, you got to work, work, work. You got to play your way into the league where everybody says, you know what, dude can play. All right, great to have you with us. Really big show coming up tomorrow. Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal, on the $500 million Michigan State has allocated in victim settlements. Jordan Rodrigue on the sale of the Carolina Panthers. Mark Wogenrich tomorrow on Matt Millen. And Sean Leahy on the matchup between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Washington Capitals. Kim Jones here on Friday. Thanks for joining us. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.